left hand to help free his right, but found that he couldn't release his grip. Martin repeated, "How?" At the moment, that was the best his mind could come up with. Gary, struggling with both hands, said,
"Come on, guys, settle down. Let us explain."
Martin yelled,
"How?"
again. Jimmy smiled.
"How what, Martin? How am I back here? How can they possibly explain themselves? How are your hands stuck together? Which how do you want answered?"
"All of them," Tyler spat. "And make it fast so we can get to killing you."
Jimmy turned to face Tyler.
"Tyler, I know you're angry, and with good reason, but don't exaggerate. We all know you aren't murderers. You're better than that. And even if you were killers, you couldn't kill me with your hands all joined together like this. You can't attack me physically, and without your staffs, you can't do magic. The worst you can do is give me a particularly aggressive group hug."
Martin asked,
"How are you doing this? I don't see a staff in your hand."
Jimmy said,
"I have a wand in my pocket."
He reached in his robe's deep side pocket and produced a wand. He turned to Philip and said,
"And no, I'm not gonna make the obvious joke."
"Go ahead,"
Philip cried.
"It can't make me like you any less."
"Wait," Jeff said. "I got my wand in my pocket too. Transporto Hemo."
Nothing happened. Jeff wasn't transported home. Jimmy's plan wasn't foiled. Gary and Eddie didn't look surprised. Gary said,
"Okay, be cool, everybody, we'll explain. Everything's gonna be fine."
Eddie added,
"Yeah, Gary and I have the situation under control. You all don't have your powers right now, but Gary and I do. Jimmy has some powers, but they're limited, and there's nothing he can do that Gary and I can't stop, okay? Jimmy just wants to say something. Then you'll all be released."
"What can he possibly have to say that'll make any difference?"
Philip asked.
"He played God with people's lives, ghosted Tyler, accidentally killed an entire town, then tried to kill all of us."
"That's the thing,"
Eddie said.
"He wants to apologize."
Philip couldn't believe what he was hearing.
"He told you he wants to apologize?"
"Yes,"
Jimmy said.
"I told them that I want to apologize. I also told them that if I came before you all without powers, you'd never believe that my apology was genuine. You would just think that I was trying to manipulate you into letting me be a wizard again. I told them that in order for you to see that I was genuinely sorry, I would have to have the upper hand when I apologized. And that meant that Gary and Eddie would have to give me some of my powers back so that I could trap all of you, so that I could demonstrate how sorry I am."
"That makes no sense,"
Martin said.
"The logic doesn't hold up. It doesn't matter if you've got the rest of us in check. If Gary and Eddie are still more powerful than you and can stop you from harming us, then you don't have the upper hand and your whole argument falls apart."
Jimmy nodded appreciatively.
"That's a very good point, Martin. I guess it's a good thing I stripped Gary and Eddie of their powers, too."
At the same moment, as if they had rehearsed it, Eddie and Gary looked stricken, attempted to teleport away, and failed to go anywhere. Jimmy said,
"Problem, guys? The wands in your pockets aren't working like they used to?"
He turned to Philip.
"Sorry about that. Sometimes the obvious joke makes itself."
"This is impossible,"
Gary shouted.
"I would have seen it if he'd taken my powers too. I stood behind him and watched over his shoulder while he wrote every line of this macro."
"Not every line,"
Jimmy said.
"You may remember there was a brief moment when you were distracted."
"No,
I distracted you,"
Jimmy assured him.
"Not a chance.
By breaking wind,"
Jimmy reminded him.
"Oh, yeah,"
Gary groaned.
"It was foul. Really, guys, you should have been there."
Jimmy shrugged.
"Garlic, it has that effect on me."
Martin shook his head at Gary.
"And what? You left to open a window?"
"No,"
Gary said.
"I was doubled over laughing. I was standing right behind him. It was classic."
Jimmy said,
"I knew Gary's fatal weakness, scat humor. While he was distracted, I wrote a small bit of code that called out to a much larger chunk of code I'd written before I came back in time. It's housed on a server I set up, and when triggered, it relieved Eddie and Gary of their powers, among other things."
"Other things?"
Philip snarled.
"Yes, it reinstated all of my powers, not just the limited range Eddie and Gary granted me, and it has surrounded me with a circular force field in case any of you tries to kick me." "Go ahead,"
Jimmy urged them.
"Give it a try."
After a long moment in which nobody moved, Jimmy said,
"Pity, I always enjoyed the Rockettes."
Jimmy got face to face with Philip.
"So you see,"
he said,
"you are completely helpless. I have all of my powers. You have none of yours."
Jimmy tapped Philip on the forehead with his wand, just to drive the point home.
"I can do anything I like with you."
Jimmy flicked his wand upward, and the circle of wizards rose into the air as one unit. They stopped gaining altitude at about 40 feet, well below the height of the Great Hall's ceiling, but more than high enough to get their attention. They hovered there, stationary. It would have been almost majestic if they hadn't all been yelling threats and profanities. Jimmy called for silence and was ignored. He tried again with no more success. Jimmy sighed, then flicked his wand again, causing the ring of wizards to spin. Jimmy shouted,
"The spinning will stop when the yelling stops!"
After a moment, the room went quiet. Jimmy jerked back on the wand and the rotation stopped abruptly.
"Sadly, I've just traded yelling for moaning," Jimmy thought. "As long as it doesn't escalate further, that'll be fine. And if it does escalate to throwing up, well, I have my force field."
Jimmy drifted into the air until he was floating in the center of the circle.
"So," Jimmy said, "you are all helpless. I am in control, and you will listen to me. I had a lot of time to think about what you all did to me. You foiled my plans, passed judgment on me, then sent me away to live the rest of my life in poverty and squalor, if I was lucky. If I was unlucky, you knew there was a chance I'd be beaten to death by Argentinian soccer fans. Well, I was lucky. After they got tired of using me as a hacky sack, they turned me over to the police. It took me months to talk my way out of prison, years to get out of South America, and decades to finally get back here."
Jimmy started slowly lowering himself and the wizards to the floor, but he kept talking as they went. Jimmy continued,
"Every step I took, slogging through the middle of nowhere on foot, pedaling a broken bicycle someone else had thrown out as trash, begging for coins on muddy foreign streets. Wherever I was, I always remembered where I had been and how I'd gotten from the one place to the other."
He faced Philip.
"I've pictured your face a million times. Imagined what I'd do if we ever met again."
The ring of wizards touched down on the solid marble floor, but it did little to make them feel more secure. Jimmy had demonstrated that he could do whatever he wanted with them. The idea that it might involve the floor was not reassuring.
"So, here we are,"
Jimmy continued. He spoke to the entire group, but he seemed to face Philip, Martin, and Tyler more than the others as he did so.
"I've survived your punishment, and using my own resources, I have regained access to the file and the shell. I have undone all that you have done to me. Now that I am powerful and you are powerless, I can do what I came here to do."
"Just get it over with,"
Philip spat.
"Okay,"
Jimmy said.
"I will."
Jimmy centered himself within the circle of terrified wizards, spun around once, savoring the moment, then fell to his knees, raised his hands above his head, and in a voice drenched in emotion, he cried out,
"I am sorry! I apologize! I was wrong! So terribly wrong! I was wrong to play God! I was wrong to cover it up! And I was certainly wrong to try to kill all of you!"
"What the hell is this?"
Tyler asked in disbelief.
"It's me! Apologizing!"
Jimmy said.
"I don't blame you for being confused. You've never seen it before."
"You're not here for revenge?"
Philip asked.
"I don't deserve any. It's not like any of you wronged me. I deserve the punishment you gave me for what I did to Tyler alone. I deserve far worse if you throw in my attempt to have you all beaten to death by orcs, making the orcs in the first place, and what happened to Rickard's Bend, which was an accident, but that doesn't make those people less dead, does it?"
"No,"
Martin agreed.
"As a matter of fact, it doesn't."
Jimmy turned to Martin.
"I know. I can never truly make up for any of it. Even that awful, humiliating beating I gave you in this very room. The shame and anger must be terrible. The embarrassment must still feel fresh for you. Can you ever forgive me for humiliating you with your own macro like that?
It wasn't that humiliating, Martin said. I mean, I held my own pretty good. Jimmy smiled.
That's very gracious of you, Martin, but please don't sugarcoat it. I attacked you brutally with a macro you yourself designed, making you look pathetic and inept in front of a large crowd of spectators. Can you ever forgive me?
Martin said, I doubt it.
I don't blame you. I don't blame any of you, not one bit. I am asking you to forgive me, though. I have returned to ask you all to please forgive me for what I've done. Not because I deserve your forgiveness, but because you deserve the opportunity to forgive.
Gary said, so you're telling me the truth?
Yes,
Jimmy said.
The easiest way to manipulate someone is to tell them the truth.
After you've twisted the truth to fit your needs,
Philip spat.
I prefer to think that I pruned the truth like a bonsai tree. I removed some of the ugly bits and made it more elegant. Gary, Eddie, you wanted to believe that I was here to apologize, and the truth is I was here to apologize. But for the apology to be believed, I needed everyone to be helpless. I told you that. I just glossed over the fact that you're part of everyone. Most people forget that they're part of everyone. You say everyone, and everyone hears everyone else.
Philip said,
does this really seem like the best way to apologize to us, manipulating us like this?
I see your point, Jimmy said. But what can I do? It's what I'm good at. It's part of my nature. I can't help manipulating people any more than you can help being sarcastic.
Oh, that's brilliant,
Philip said.
Well, here's some more truth, Tyler said. Your apology's a load of crap. You say your apology wouldn't hold water unless we saw you as a threat. Well, if we accept it, that won't hold any water either for the same reason. Saying forgive me or else doesn't show a lot of remorse.
Quite right, Jimmy said. That's why your powers were all reinstated and mine were taken away when I said I am sorry, I apologize. That's why I had to lower us back to the floor. If I didn't, we'd have fallen.
The wizards glanced around the circle at each other, then quickly let go of each other's hands as if they'd all received a mild electric shock. Jeff produced his wand and tested it by levitating Jimmy, holding him helpless in the air. He started to put Jimmy back down, but Philip stopped him.
No, leave him up there. I have some questions to ask.
Jimmy said,
that's fine, perfectly understandable. You have my permission to keep me suspended here if it makes you all more comfortable.
Shut up,
Philip barked.
So you're here to apologize, huh? And you expect us to just welcome you back with open arms?
That would be wonderful, but no, I don't expect that. You can't truly trust me now, but I hope you'll give me the opportunity to earn your trust.
What if we don't? What if we take your powers away again and send you back where you came from?
Then I've lost nothing. In fact, I've already gained the knowledge that I at least offered an apology.
Tyler said,
great. So either we send you back and you win, or we welcome you back like nothing ever happened and you win.
Jimmy shook his head.
I don't really win in either case. I either lose my powers again and get sent back to the future to die, or I stay here with 30 years worth of wear on my body and bad memories in my head, struggling to regain your trust and respect, which I probably will never get. I can't really call either of those winning. They're just better than where I was before.
There's a third option you haven't mentioned, Martin said. We decide not to forgive you, and you disappear with your powers intact. You may be sorry for what you did, but you've admitted that you're willing to omit parts of the truth to get your way.
Do you honestly expect us to believe that you don't have an escape plan in place? That's a very good question, Martin, but I can't answer it. If, hypothetically, I said yes, I do have an escape plan, it would undo all of my arguments. If I say no, you won't believe me anyway. What can I say?
Tell the truth, Martin said. Do you have an escape plan? Without any hesitation, Jimmy said,
no, I don't. Now you tell the truth, Martin. Do you believe me?
No.
I don't blame you.
I don't care. Jimmy was left floating in the middle of the hall while the wizards huddled in the far corner and argued for a good long time. Jimmy could identify which wizard was speaking and their general tone of voice, but couldn't make out what they were saying. There was almost always at least one wizard peering at Jimmy nervously. Occasionally, all debate would stop, and all of the wizards would turn as a group to stare at him for a moment. The first time it happened, Jimmy smiled and waved. He could tell from the tone of the voices he heard immediately after that it had been a bad move. He spent the rest of the time trying to convey a sense of nervous hopefulness with a slight note of desperation. Finally, he heard Philip say something in that loud, stilted voice guys like Philip use when they're trying to sound like a leader. Then he saw the majority of the wizards raise their hands. Philip said something in the tone of voice guys like him use when they've dropped something heavy on their foot, and Jimmy knew things had gone his way. The wizards came back to where Jimmy floated, but they stayed grouped together rather than reforming a ring around him. Philip snarled with obvious distaste.
Okay, we've come to a decision, but before we tell you what that is, we have some questions.
Jimmy said,
ask me anything.
Why did you come back now? From our point of view, you just tried to kill us all less than 2 months ago. Some of the guys are still having nightmares about it. Why not give us a year or two to calm down?
It's almost always best to apologize as soon as possible after you've wronged someone. It shows more remorse. And while sometimes people do get less angry over time, just as often they actually get angrier. The more they remember what you did, the worse it can seem to them, until eventually they blame you for doing things that are much worse than what you actually did.
Tyler asked,
what would be worse than ghosting me, killing an entire town, trying to murder all of us, and trying to kill Martin with your bare hands?
Jimmy said,
I don't know, and I didn't want to find out.
The wizards grumbled, but nobody argued, so Jimmy continued.
I would have come back right after you banished me if I could, but I also needed a time when, well, I can't think of a better way to put this. I needed the coast to be clear. I knew that you, Philip, or Martin might just attack me at first sight, so I had to find a time when all three of you were scarce, and my informant told me that this week they were in Atlantis, which I can't wait to hear about, by the way, and that you were away researching your next book, Dragon Wagon.
Dragon Wagon?
Jeff asked.
Yeah, Tyler said. It's an idea I have about a guy who hitches a wagon to a dragon and uses it to haul freight. It's sort of a sword and sorcery meets Smokey and the Bandit kind of thing.
Tyler's curiosity overwhelmed his anger. He asked Jimmy,
how does it turn out?
My informant says it's some of your best work, but it doesn't sell very well.
Who's your informant?
You are, Tyler. I visited you in the future and persuaded you to help me.
What could you possibly say to make me want to help you?
Jimmy said,
I can't tell you. The only reason you even talk to me in the future is to find out what I'm going to say to you to get you to help me. If I say it to you now, it won't work then.
Tell me!
Tyler yelled.
I will. Just before you help me.
Philip put a hand on Tyler's shoulder.
Okay, look, we're getting sidetracked. Tyler, you two can discuss it later.
Jimmy added,
and we do.
Shut up!
Philip barked.
Next question. How did you get access to the file? We fixed you so that no computer would work anywhere near you. How'd you get around that?
I found someone who'd be motivated to help me.
Who?
Philip asked.
The federal agents who tried to arrest Martin. I figured Martin had vanished right in front of them twice. They'd probably want to know how he'd done it.
Martin asked.
How did you find them?
Jimmy smiled.
Your parents gave me their number.
What? What did you do to my parents?
I told them that you hadn't hurt anybody, and that you hadn't broken any laws that I knew of, and if they'd give me the number of the agents who'd been there, I could prove it. I told them the truth. They're lovely people, by the way.
You told the feds about the file?
Philip asked.
Yes, and I understand your concern, Philip. But think it through. If the men I worked with ever figure out how to use the file on their own, what are they going to do? Come back here and arrest us? No, they'd join us if they could. Anyway, don't worry. They'll never find their way back to the file without my help. And even if they do, we'll have password protected that instance of it, just like you did all the others. How'd you do that, by the way?
The wizards were confused by this. Philip put up a hand to silence their muttering and said,
all known copies of the file have been locked down, but we still have total access. It'll be in the report.
He turned his attention back to Jimmy.
How'd you get into the file? I know the copy you found was locked down. It was the first one I told the Atlanteans about.
I know, I checked.
Jimmy said.
We hunted down every copy I knew of, and they were all locked. Eventually, I remembered that there was one wizard who'd never trusted any of us enough to tell us where he found the file.
Todd, Philip said. You went to Todd.
I went to Todd.
Todd was the one wizard nobody ever wanted to talk about. Martin didn't know why, because nobody wanted to talk about it.
How is he?
Philip asked.
In prison for life,
Jimmy answered.
That's good. Nice of you to point him out to the feds. I'm sure they have a lot to talk about. They'll probably tell us all about it when he leads them here.
That's not gonna happen, Philip. However your friends in Atlantis locked down all of our file instances, now they can do it to his as well. I can tell you exactly where it is.
Tyler asked,
What did you tell him to get him to help you? You banished him. He must hate you nearly as much as I do.
He hates all of us, Jimmy said. So I told him that giving me the means to come back here would make the rest of you very angry. In essence, I am his revenge. You should be grateful. It could have been much worse.
Philip said,
I'll be the judge of that.
The wizards retreated back to their huddle. They had another hushed conversation. They took another vote. From the sound of it, Philip suffered another disappointment. When the wizards returned, Philip spat his words at Jimmy.
You've got a choice. You can either go back to the time you came from, with your magnetic field restored and your access to the file cut off, for good this time, or...
Jimmy said,
I choose the second option.
Wait!
Philip sputtered.
I haven't even told you what it is.
It'll be preferable to the first option, I'm sure of it.
It could be something awful. It could be that we'll kill you.
Jimmy laughed.
Philip, you'd never be a party to that. As much as you hate me, you'd never kill me unless it was self-defense. You're a good man, and we both know it.
Philip was disgusted.
You say you're a good man like it's an insult.
No, Jimmy protested. I mean it as a high compliment. You just hear it as an insult when it comes from me. Honestly, I wish I were more like you, Philip. The last 30 years of my life would have been very different if I were.
So you want to be good for selfish reasons?
Jimmy shrugged.
It doesn't sound great when you put it that way, but you gotta admit, it's progress.
Philip decided to just plow ahead as if he hadn't been interrupted.
The second option is that you stay here, where we can keep an eye on you, and that is exactly what we will do. Rest assured, we will all be watching, just waiting for you to do anything we don't like. The file modifications that stop the aging process and make you impervious to physical damage and illness will be left in place for now. But at the first sign of anything we don't like, you're cut off and sent back to the future to die in squalor.
Or find my way back again.
Jimmy said, instantly regretting it.
Oh, don't worry about that,
Philip said.
I intend to spend every moment between now and the day you step out of line, thinking up new, awful ways to prevent that from happening.
What if I never step out of line?
A bitter smile crossed Philip's lips.
Then I get to spend an eternity imagining demeaning things to do to you. Not a bad consolation prize.
I see,
Jimmy said.
If you stay,
Philip continued,
for a probationary period, your access to the shell will be severely limited.
Jimmy asked,
How limited?
Oh, Philip said. Look who has questions all of the sudden. Mister, I'll take the second option. Want some details?
Jimmy said,
Make no mistake, I'll take the second option. I just asked out of curiosity.
You can conjure up food and water. You can create money, but there'll be limits on how much you can make per week. You can teleport, but only to certain defined geographic locations. If you want to go anywhere else, you need permission from at least 2 other wizards. Or you can fly. By the way, your flight will be limited to an altitude of 50 feet above ground level and a speed of 25 miles per hour. We only gave you that so that the locals wouldn't be able to beat you to death as soon as they see you. I lost that vote. You will have no access to edit the shell, which means no macros. And for the duration of your probation, every time you use magic, it will automatically be logged in a document that any of us can read at any time. That way we can keep tabs on you.
Jimmy nodded as if all of this were expected. After a moment, he asked,
How long is the probationary period?
Philip said,
Until we unanimously vote to lift it. So pretty much forever.
Jimmy said,
Fair enough.
Jimmy was allowed to touch the ground again, and was treated to a full round of mumbled greetings and suspicious looks. He graciously thanked everyone for this second chance. Then he had the good sense to keep his mouth shut and try to blend into the background. He figured he'd be doing a lot of that from now on. Roy's macro was quite impressive. With the clenching of his fist, he caused a volcano to emerge from the ground spontaneously and erupt in a thick lava flow. It would certainly make an impression on any local who witnessed it, and it impressed the wizards even more so, since they could all instantly recognize that the volcano was papier-mâché, and the lava flow was made up of baking soda and vinegar foam and food coloring. The next morning, Martin called Philip to discuss the Jimmy situation. Martin said,
I don't like it.
Then why'd you vote in favor of it?
Philip asked.
It's like I said last night. He's demonstrated that he's not going to just slink away and leave us alone. We're not going to kill him. At least this way we can keep an eye on him.
Yeah, Philip said. If only there was a way to keep an eye on him without having to look at him all the time.
Well, I guess the good news is that he'll probably avoid the two of us for the most part. And Tyler, I'd assume. Heck, especially Tyler.
Philip said,
I wish that made me feel better. That's the worst thing about this. There's no way to win. I don't want him anywhere near me, but I'm uncomfortable having him out of my sight. There's nothing he can do that will make me comfortable. He has my complete distrust.
But to be fair, that's nothing new. You never trusted him.
No,
Philip said.
That's not true. There are different kinds of trust, and up until yesterday, I knew in the bottom of my soul that I could count on Jimmy to do what was best for himself. Now, though, he's trying to prove that he's changed, and that means he'll try to do the right thing for everyone.
Martin said,
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, but it isn't,
Philip said.
Because he's got such a twisted view of morality, there's no telling what he'll think the right thing is.
Epilogue. 862 years later. Agent Miller leaned against the wall. His hard-soled dress shoes were killing him, and the hard concrete floor wasn't helping. But the warden had been adamant that nothing that could be used as a weapon could be allowed anywhere near the prisoner. Given the prisoner's familiarity with professional wrestling, a folding chair definitely qualified as a potential weapon. Miller asked,
What's our next move, kid?
Todd said, scolding Agent Miller.
That's not how we do things. We have an agreement. I give you information. You answer a question. Squid pro quo.
I told you, kid. It's quid pro quo.
Todd rolled his eyes.
Yeah, and I told you I've seen Silence of the Lambs like 3 times, and it's squid pro quo.
We've been through this, kid. Squid pro quo makes no sense.
Todd snorted.
Oh, and quid pro quo makes all the sense in the world.
Todd crossed his eyes, made his teeth stick out of his mouth, and flapped his arms limply while repeating,
Quid pro quo! Quid pro quo!
He laughed at how stupid Agent Miller was being, and said,
I told you, the hero, that Hannibal guy, was a fancy chef, and Squid Pro Quo was like the name of his favorite dish or something.
Miller growled.
Quid Pro Quo is Latin.
Oh, yeah? Do you speak Latin?
Agent Miller asked.
Is that your question?
Todd stiffened.
No. I wouldn't waste a question on something that stupid. Here's my question, Agent Miller. Have you ever shot a man in the face?
No,
Miller growled.
I have not.
Todd chuckled as if he was disappointed, but not surprised.
Fine, he said. Your answer is satisfactory. The next step is to type in dir.
Dir.
Yes. Obviously. It stands for directory. Tell your partner. Now.
Miller said,
Don't tell me what to do, kid.
Todd snorted again.
Miller, the whole reason you're here was so I can tell you what to do.
Miller attempted to kill Todd with nothing more than prolonged, furious eye contact. When it became clear that it wasn't working, he shouted,
Murph, type dir.
From around a corner, down a hall, through a locked gate, and well beyond the range of Todd's magnetic field, Murphy yelled,
Dir!
Yes!
Miller shouted, without tearing his eyes away from Todd.
D-I-R! It means directory!
Obviously.
Murphy replied. Miller's attempt to stare Todd to death backfired, in that it only gave him a good view as Todd laughed at him. After a few seconds, Murphy's distant voice called out,
It's giving me a big, long list of stuff. Do I need to read it all out, or does he know what we're looking for?
Miller asked,
Well, you heard him. Do you know what we're looking for?
Todd smiled.
Squid pro quo, Agent Miller. Have you ever shot a man in the junk?
Miller said,
Not yet.
Second epilogue, 2,492 years earlier. Puffy white clouds coasted over a choppy blue-gray sea, which surrounded an island with swaying palm trees and white sandy beaches. Britt materialized, closed her eyes, and exhaled. 5 seconds ago, she had been Britt the Younger. 100 years later, she knew she would become Britt the Elder, but for now, finally, she was just Britt. Her farewell from Atlantis had been a pretty heavy emotional scene. Live anywhere for 50 years, and you're going to feel some emotions when you leave, even if you've been looking forward to moving on. The fact that she knew she was just leaving to build Atlantis in the first place, and that she was doomed to return whether she wanted to or not, didn't seem to matter to her tear ducts. She had wanted to keep things low-key. She invited Gwen and Martin out to see her off, and asked Britt the Elder to come over, and to please bring Ampix. Ampix was in his 60s now. He was still technically Britt the Elder's servant, but since he had aged and she hadn't, she spent more time taking care of him than the other way around. It had been interesting to watch Ampix's role in Britt the Elder's life change over the years. He'd gone from grateful servant to trusted assistant, to loyal confidant, to wise advisor, and had finally settled into funny old crank. He had also married and had several children and been widowed in the meantime. Britt didn't see the need for her transitioning to this new chapter of her life to be a major event. Thanks to teleportation and time travel, relocating to another time was no more of an inconvenience than moving to a new apartment. She could still go visit anybody she wanted any time she wanted. Really, she still lived in the same place, just a century or so earlier. There was no need to make it a big deal. She just wanted to be seen off by a few friends. In retrospect, she felt foolish forever thinking that she might get her way. The first sign that her goodbye had been hijacked was when Britt the Elder showed up early with Ampix and Philip.
Why did you bring him?
Britt the Younger whispered just quietly enough to be certain that Philip would hear it. Philip said,
Look, I can go. I don't want to.
Britt the Elder turned and pleasantly shushed Philip, then told Britt the Younger,
I invited Philip because he's Philip. Yeah, I know he's Philip. Philip and I aren't getting along right now.
Philip said,
Seriously, I'll just go.
Both Brits shushed him, one pleasantly, the other not so much. Britt the Elder said,
I know you two aren't getting along right now. Maybe he and I are? Well, your relationship with him has nothing to do with me. Well, I'm the future version of you, so my relationship has everything to do with you.
Britt the Younger furrowed her brow.
Okay, wait, is that some future Philip, or is he my Philip?
Britt the Elder smiled.
Your Philip? I thought you weren't getting along.
Yeah,
Philip added. Both Brits shushed him. Neither one was very pleasant about it.
I am not going to miss you.
Britt the Younger seethed at the Elder. Britt the Elder said,
Yes, you are,
and hugged Britt the Younger. When the unidirectional hug ended, Britt the Elder said,
And now it's time.
She swiped her finger through the air a few times, made a selection, and all four of them, both Brits, Philip, and Ampix, were transported to the park at the center of the city. Every sorceress in Atlantis, along with every important merchant in town, all of the citizens, elected officials, representatives from most of the other time traveler colonies, Nick and his husband, and Gwen and Martin. Looking up at the city, Britt the Younger could see that every window, every balcony, every public space with a view of the bowl was filled with people. The next 20 minutes were a blur of heartfelt speeches and firm handshakes. In the end, she managed to say a few words without blubbering too horrendously. The last person she spoke to before officially leaving was Britt the Elder. They both understood that it was just good showmanship for their goodbye to be saved for last. To Britt the Younger's surprise, she heard herself say,
"Thanks for arranging this." Britt the Elder said, "Are you kidding? It was my pleasure. You earned it by putting up with me all these years. And besides, how often do you get to plan your own goodbye party?"
Then Britt transported to the place and time she'd always known she'd go eventually. And the Britt the Younger part of her life was over.
"Right now, in Atlantis," she thought. "Well, not right now. Right now is right now, and I haven't built Atlantis yet. But in the future, just after the time that felt like right now a minute ago, Britt the Elder is just Britt, and so am I. We're both flying solo."
The thought both scared Britt and made her laugh.
"Of course, she's flying solo for life. In a couple of 100 years, I'm going to have Britt the Younger to deal with. As I remember, she could be kind of a handful."
Britt laughed again. That was a problem for another day. For now, she could enjoy her solitude. Tonight, she would build a shelter. She was picturing a perfectly clear dome made of diamond, the world's most expensive igloo. It would keep wind and rain off, but allow her to look at the stars and the waves whenever she wanted. And because there was nobody around, she didn't need to worry about anyone looking in at her. Britt cracked her knuckles, then limbered up her fingers and started scrolling through menu options, preparing to start construction of her new home, when she was severely startled by a voice behind her.
"You'd better get to work, girlie. Shelter's not going to build itself."
Britt spun around and found herself face to face with herself. Only the other version of herself was wearing some kind of shawl.
"I know, dear," the other Brit said. "You didn't expect to see me here. You see, I've been the only Brit around for a few 100 years now, and it's been great, but I've always felt guilty that you got stuck building Atlantis on your own, so I figured I'd come back here, keep you company, and kind of, you know, supervise."
Brit made several confused, guttural noises.
"I know, it's a surprise. If it makes it easier to keep things straight, you can call me Britt the Much Elder. Or how about Grand Britt?"
Britt made more inarticulate noises. Grand Britt looked concerned for as long as she could, before finally cracking up and laughing.
"Kidding,"
Grand Britt said.
"I was kidding."
Grand Britt disappeared, and Britt was left alone.
This audiobook is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of the next book in the series free.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Spell or High Water by Scott Meyer. Copyright 2014 by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels. Directed by Colleen Willits. Engineered by Jason Freeman. Performance copyright 2014 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of An Unwelcome Quest by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels. The following is intended to be a fun, comedic, sci-fi fantasy novel. Any similarity between the events described and how reality actually works is purely coincidental. Prologue. It was a momentous day in Camelot. Not as momentous as the day a time-traveling computer enthusiast named Philip showed up, called himself a wizard, and demonstrated the ability to do what appeared to be genuine magic. Not as momentous as the day another wizard, calling himself Merlin, talked the king into changing his oldest son's name to Arthur, and the city of London's name to Camelot. Certainly not as momentous as the day construction of the monstrously huge gold-plated castle at the heart of Camelot had been completed. All of these things were made possible by a computer file that Philip, Merlin, or as he was originally known and would be known again one day, Jimmy, and all of the other wizards had found. The file proved that reality was merely an artificial construct controlled by a computer program. Manipulating this file allowed one to manipulate reality itself, travel in time, and create things that were, in a word, magical. Things like the initiation of a new wizard, which was the particular momentous event scheduled for this day. What nobody knew was that this would also be the day that the wizards of Camelot first found reason to expel a wizard and exile him back to his own time. It was, as we've established, a momentous day. Every wizard in Europe was gathered in the main ceremonial hall of the Castle Camelot, eating good food that was bad for them, drinking very good drinks that were very bad for them, and generally enjoying themselves, because that was how the initiation ceremony worked. Besides, the powers they gained from their use of the computer file ensured that the food and drinks couldn't really hurt them, which made the party all the more enjoyable. 20 or so wizards sat around a table that would have filled any reasonably sized room, but which was almost lost in the vastness of the great hall. The hall was a cavernous expanse of polished marble and gold. The wizards all wore flowing robes and pointed hats. Most of them had staffs leaning against the table or lying on the floor behind them. A few had wands. Every group has its nonconformists. All of them, regardless of their personal magical prop preference, were just finishing their meals.
"So, Gary, how'd you enjoy having an apprentice?" Philip asked, before taking a swig of beer from his large earthenware stein.
Gary winced, which was funny, because that was exactly how most of the people who knew Gary had reacted when they heard it was his turn to train an apprentice.
"I don't know," Gary said. "It was cool, I guess."
Gary lapsed into a silence that begged those who heard it to ask for more detail. Philip responded with a silence that invited Gary to keep talking.
We didn't really hit it off," Gary continued, shaking his head.
He was a tall, spindly man with limp black hair and a limp black robe. When he shook his head, the ends of his hair waved like the tassels on the dress of a flapper, dancing at a funeral. Tyler asked,
"What do you mean? Did you fight?"
Tyler and Jeff were the other two members of the contingent from the small town of Leadchurch. Tyler was one of the few black men who had ever found the file and used it to go to medieval England instead of, say, ancient Morocco. Jeff was a slightly built man with black hair and a brilliant mind. He had been a successful engineer before finding the file. Jeff and Tyler were good friends with Philip, and even better friends with Gary. They usually spent a great deal of time hanging around with Gary, because he was fun, and his place was something of a party house. Or, in his case, a party skull-shaped cave. They had deliberately kept their distance since Gary had been assigned his trainee.
"We didn't fight,"
Nothing like that, Gary said. He looked to the far end of the table. The trainee being initiated was sitting at the head of the table, being lightly brainwashed by the chairman of the wizards, Merlin, as was also the custom. The Lead Church wizards were sitting at the far end of the banquet table, and Philip was taking periodic breaks from the conversation to glare at Merlin, his face a mask of loathing and scorn. Again, this was the custom.
It's just, Gary struggled. Our senses of humor didn't really mesh.
Jeff said,
So he didn't think you were funny. Big deal. Neither do I most of the time.
No, Gary said. It's not that he didn't think I was funny. It's that he thought I was funny at the wrong times. If I said or did something I thought was funny, it would just confuse him. But occasionally I'd say something serious and it would make him laugh.
For example? Philip asked.
When I told him that we could make it so we didn't need air or water, but we couldn't figure out how to not feel like we need them, he thought that was the funniest thing ever. I told him it would be horrible, and he said, so we don't do it to ourselves, just save it for someone else. He even wrote up a quick macro just to prove it could be done. It makes you invisible, too. He called it ghosting.
I can see how that would make you uncomfortable, Philip said.
Gary said,
I know, right?
Well, I wouldn't worry, Tyler said. It wouldn't work.
Philip looked to the end of the table. Jimmy. Everyone called him Merlin, but to Philip, he'd always be Jimmy. Or that jackass Jimmy, if he was feeling particularly honest. Was leaning toward the trainee, smiling broadly and chuckling as he said something Philip was certain wasn't funny. The trainee had dark brown hair and a face that was mostly nose. He wore a brand new chocolate brown robe. His staff leaned against the table, a varnished piece of wood as straight as a tent pole, topped with what appeared to be a red mushroom with white dots on the cap. The trainee looked on impassively as that jackass Jimmy laughed out loud and slapped the trainee on the shoulder.
What's his name again? Philip asked.
Todd, Gary answered.
Where's he from?
Phoenix, Arizona, 2005.
Where'd he find the file? Tyler asked.
He never said,
Gary answered with a shrug.
What do you mean, he never said? Jeff asked.
When I say he never said, what I mean is that he, Todd, never said. I can't break it down any farther than that.
Yeah, Jeff said, rolling his eyes. I get that. But didn't you ask? How could you spend nearly a month training the guy and never ask?
I never said I didn't ask, Gary explained. I didn't say I never asked. I didn't never ask. I never didn't ask.
Are you saying that you asked? Jeff asked.
Gary said,
I asked every day. I asked where he found the file. I asked why he'd come here. I asked if he'd gotten in trouble back in his time. Hell, I asked what he did for a living. All I ever got out of him was that he was from Phoenix, from the year 2005. After that, he changed the subject. Eventually, I figured my job was to train him, not to write his biography.
Philip looked back to the far end of the table. Todd was giggling. Jimmy looked confused and shared a look with his assistant, Eddie, who looked uncomfortable. Jimmy glanced down to Philip's end of the table. Philip quickly looked away. He didn't want Jimmy to see him looking. Philip would be mortified if Jimmy thought that Philip cared what Jimmy thought.
What kind of things made him laugh? Philip asked.
Gary said,
Weird stuff. Things you wouldn't expect. I told him all about the pranks you can pull on people using teleportation and conjuring spells, and he just sat there. Then I told him about the spells we aren't allowed to do. Body modification, you know, the dangerous stuff. I don't know. I guess something about the way I described it just struck him funny.
Philip looked back to the head of the table. Jimmy's assistant, Eddie, was talking. Like his boss, Eddie had adopted a fake name to live under as a wizard, but Philip was willing to give him a pass. Eddie was the only Asian wizard in Europe, so he wore a red and gold robe and worked under the name Wing Po, the mysterious wizard from the Orient. At this point in history, people didn't know how to react to Eddie, the mysterious wizard from the Orient. They already had difficulty dealing with Eddie's thick New Jersey accent. Eddie was smiling broadly, talking to Todd, the trainee, who was staring back at him, expressionless. Jimmy was looking at Philip's end of the table, staring at Gary as if trying to get his attention. Jimmy gave up on Gary and looked directly at Philip. There was something in Jimmy's expression that kept Philip from looking away. Philip had felt a little unsettled. Jimmy looked uncomfortable. Philip had never seen that before, and that made him feel a whole lot unsettled. Philip thought for a moment, then asked Gary,
"Say, what's Todd doing for his macro?"
A macro is a sort of simple program, often used by computer experts to trigger a series of commands with one keystroke. Since the Wizards of Camelot's powers were derived from computer code, they used macros to create complex magical effects designed to impress other wizards and freak out the locals.
"I don't know," Gary answered. "He wouldn't tell me anything. I figured I'd let him have his surprise. He seemed excited about it. I think it might be something kind of public. He asked a lot of questions about the locals."
Philip looked back to the head of the table. Todd was laughing heartily at something. Both Jimmy and Eddie were looking at Philip. Jimmy glanced at Todd, then back to Philip, raising his eyebrows as if to ask a question. Philip didn't know what the question was, and certainly didn't know the answer, so he shrugged, ending the three-way nonverbal conversation that had only really communicated the fact that none of them knew what was going on. Jimmy frowned and said something to Todd, who stopped laughing and sat up straight. Jimmy stood and cleared his throat. Slowly, all of the wizards stopped talking. Jimmy spread his arms wide, the gold trim on his jade-green robe glowing in the candlelight. He said,
"Well, friends, I hope you've all enjoyed your meal."
There were nods and a murmur of assent. Philip said,
"I enjoyed it too,"
intimating that he was not Jimmy's friend. It wasn't a very good heckle, not up to Philip's usual standards. For some reason, his heart wasn't in it. Jimmy smirked and continued, a bit more confidently than before. Philip's hostility had put him back on familiar footing.
"As you all know, we are here to celebrate the arrival of a new wizard, Todd. He has been studying with Gary, and tomorrow he faces the trials."
They all smiled at this. Everyone at the table except Todd knew that the trials were a sham and that the real test was already underway. After living and training with the wizard for a few weeks, the initiate spent the evening making dinner conversation with Jimmy. Then he would be asked to say a few words and perform an original piece of magic, his macro. Most of the wizard's powers were derived from a shell program Jimmy and Philip wrote many years ago, which made manipulating the file that controlled reality easier and safer. The trainee's macro would be several of the effects already written into the shell, strung together by a simple program, and would give the other wizards an idea of what kind of magic they could expect from the new wizard in the future. After all of that, everybody would reconvene without the trainee and take a vote. It was a formality. Until this night, nobody had ever been rejected. The next morning, they do everything they could to make the trainee nervous, let him in on the joke, and do everything they could to make the new wizard drunk. Jimmy continued,
"As is our custom, Todd will now say a few words. Then he will show us all his macro."
Jimmy sat down. Todd took a deep breath, then stood and addressed the group. He was not a large man, nor was he good-looking. That said, it was difficult to take your eyes off of him. Later, Philip would decide it was his eyes. Something about his eyes drew your attention to them. It was difficult not to look at them. Much like when talking to a police officer, it is difficult not to keep glancing at his gun.
"I am not a guy who makes friends easily, Todd began.
This was an excellent way to start. One didn't find oneself at this table without first stumbling across a very well-hidden computer file, and that meant spending a lot of time poking around on computers. People don't often spend lots of time poking around computers at parties. Everyone listening could have said the same thing about himself. Ed silently nodded, almost involuntarily, at Todd's confession. Todd continued.
Knowing what I know now, what we all know about how the world really works, I'm glad I didn't try.
All around the table, silently, Ed stopped nodding. Several turned slightly to the side.
Because now I find myself here, Todd said, with all of you. You've all been very kind and made me feel so welcome.
This set the audience at ease. Philip could feel the room relax. Todd smiled.
I feel very much at home here with you all. I can't imagine how terrible I would feel if you all turned on me, like all the others have.
Todd's mood seemed to darken, as did everyone else's.
But I hope that doesn't happen, Todd said. That would be unfortunate.
After a long silence, Jimmy stood, clapping his hands.
Right, he said with strained good cheer. And now, Todd, please show us your macro.
Todd instantly brightened. He left his spot at the head of the table and walked to the empty area off to the side. The half of the group sitting closest to him turned so as to easily watch the show. The hall was vast, 100 feet tall and 100 yards long. It was more than large enough for anything Todd may have had planned. But he stayed relatively close, only moving about 20 feet away from the table.
I know, Todd said, that most of you use your macro as kind of a greeting. You pull it out when you meet someone new to demonstrate your power. I hear that usually means lots of fire and smoke and flying around.
A wave of good-natured laughter rippled around the table, as if the group were collectively saying, guilty as charged. Todd smiled and laughed, but there was no mirth in it. It was the laugh of a man who heard your joke and thought it was funny that you were dumb enough to think he'd find it funny.
That doesn't really demonstrate any power, does it? Todd asked. No. I mean, sure, it shows that you have power, but it doesn't show what that power is, you know? It proves nothing. It's like a really cool explosion. Sure, the fireball and the big noise get your attention, but really, it's the crater and the destroyed daycare center that leaves an impression.
The wizards listening knew what his words meant, but didn't know what to make of what he'd said. Todd continued.
I'm doing something different. My macro doesn't hint at my power with something big and showy. It demonstrates it clearly with something small but unmistakable.
Todd waved his staff over the empty marble floor beside him and said,
Unre acrome.
Pig Latin, Philip thought. Not a promising start.
There was an explosion that created a bright flash, a hollow sound, and a smallish mushroom cloud of dingy smoke. When the cloud dissipated, Todd was standing next to a blue plastic tarp, which was obviously draped over a large human form. Todd giggled and rubbed his hands together. He reached down and grabbed one corner of the tarp with his free hand and held his mushroom staff aloft with the other. Todd said,
Guys, let me show you what real power looks like.
He ripped off the tarp and threw it with a flourish. The tarp burst into flame the instant it left his hand. It distracted the wizards from Todd's presentation more than he had expected, because he accidentally threw it directly at them, and because it burned much more slowly than he had anticipated. The flaming tarpaulin fluttered to a rest, draped over the middle of the banquet table, several chairs,
and two wizards who hadn't been quite fast enough to get out of the way. The wizards cursed and flailed,